Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, and there are some very interesting people involved, people like Carol Marx. She just happens to be the host and founder of the program and its guiding light. She's one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. And she'll be here with a very interesting interview in just a moment. But looking ahead, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, later in the program. And he'll be talking with Dr. Rosalyn Byrne. She's a PhD. She's Associate Professor of Science, Technology, and Society at the University of Virginia School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. And she's written a new book that's titled, When the Horses Whisper, The Wisdom of Wise and Sentient Beings, published by Rainbow Ridge Books. And Steve will also be talking to us about latest development in the ongoing saga of gay rights. That's coming up. Okay, let's jump right into the program. Here's the host of the program, Carol Marx, front and center, in conversation now, a two-parter for you, with Linda Obst. That's spelled O-B-S-T, Linda Obst. She was an editor for the New York Times Magazine, has produced more than 16 feature films, including How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Contact, The Fisher King, and Sleepless in Seattle. Not a bad resume. She's going to talk about her new book, Sleepless in Hollywood, Tales from the New Abnormal in the Movie Business.
How did you get into the movie business, and what were a few of your most successful movies?
Well, I got into the movie business because I had a baby. I was working at the Times, and my husband woke up one day and said, guess what? We're moving to Hollywood. And I wasn't very happy about it, to tell you the truth. I was perfectly content to be a reporter, editor for the rest of my life. In fact, I was just happy in my job for the first time when my husband announced we were moving. But when you have a baby, you have to go. So I went and found a house and started a new job. And I went to work for this man named Peter Guber, who now owns the Dodgers, among other things. And he taught me the ropes. Rather brutally, but that's the best way to learn the ropes in Hollywood. And with him, the first movie I developed was Flashdance, which took a long time to get made, but when it got made, it gave me some confirmation that I had some good instincts. And the second movie that I developed with him, it took an even longer time to get made, was Contact. And I think those are two of my favorite movies because they have female protagonists. Eventually, in terms of my most well-known movies, I made Sleepless in Seattle with Nora Ephron, who was my best friend, and I also did her directing debut, which was less known but a delightful gem that your audience should see, called This Is My Life, starring Julie Kavner about a working mother and her daughter, and it's a delicious movie. So I had the delight of working with my best friend as well. Others of my movies you may have heard of are How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Hope Floats, One Fine Day, The Fisher King. I could go on, but lots of different sort of one-off original movies, often starring women. That was my thing.
Yes, and I love that fact that so many of them starred women. Now, in the title of your book, you have the phrase, the new abnormal in the movie business. What, then, is so abnormal about making feature films in the first place, and what important cushion did DVDs provide in keeping the old abnormal in place?
Well, that's why I call it the old abnormal, because when I first came to town, you could make a movie because it was good, because you could figure out a good script, a good director, and a good cast, and you could run the table and get a movie made. These days, it's not that simple, because the DVD cushion, which was responsible for our profit cushion, kept the movie business afloat until about between 2006 and 2009, when the DVD market began to crash because of piracy and technology. But up until that time, 50% of the profits, and that's an enormous amount, literally, this was stunning to me when I discovered this, and I've been in the business for 30 years when I discovered it, literally half of our profits had come from DVD market. Their profit and loss statements were entirely dependent on being able to predict the DVD. And when that was no longer possible, for a period of time, the studios became frozen, literally frozen. They couldn't green light a picture unless they could predict its fortune some other way. For example, it was a sequel, and you could predict how the prior movie did. At the same time as this was happening, a whole bunch of other bad things were happening, like the recession and the writer's strike, which kept the studios dormant for a period of time, and they could figure out a new model. And this new model I call the new abnormal. And what they saw was that all of their new profits were coming from overseas. Suddenly, to replace all these profits, emerging markets in China, in Russia, in Brazil, newly minted middle classes and newly minted capitalists were suddenly enjoying the amazing special effects that the same technology provided in movies like Titanic and Avatar. And new theaters were being built in record markets in these new theaters, and they were eating up our amazing new movies. And those movies were the same kinds of movies that the young teenage boys who had always driven the box office before loved, action movies, movies that didn't have a lot of dialogue. Because, of course, overseas, you don't want a lot of dialogue because it requires a lot of looping. And you don't want movies with wit and nuance because that requires more looping, and they love wit and nuance in their own indigenous movies. So suddenly this began to affect the movies that the studio started to make. And they realized that the more special effects, the more gigantic action, the more buildings that were being blown up, the better the movies performed overseas. What they wanted from us was our action, our special effects, our gigantic sound design, and especially our movies with pre-awareness, titles we'd already heard of, which made the premium on sequels and titles like comic book titles even more important.
And isn't Linda an example of how important the international markets are today? Because I guess they're responsible for 80% of them. Money that movies make, the fact that even Steven Spielberg had a hard time getting his Oscar-winning movie Lincoln made, and in particular, why was that?
Well, because Lincoln is an American hero, and they don't have any idea or care who Lincoln is in China or in Russia. So Lincoln is a classic kind of movie that doesn't travel overseas. So, or Westerns, like The Lone Ranger, which, as much as it didn't please the domestic audience, it also didn't please the international audience. So these days, you need a title that has significance overseas, like The Avenger or Batman or Superman of Steel. If the title doesn't mean anything abroad, it won't travel. And so it's very rarely the director's name, except in cases like Chris Nolan, and usually with Spielberg, whose significance is important enough to open the movie overseas. There are very few of them. But if the title is literally something that has no significance overseas, that's going to be a hard movie, even for Steven Spielberg to get made.
That's really so interesting. Now, we've talked about some of the things that the Chinese want in a movie, lots of action, special effects. What are some of the things that they don't
want? Well, that's what they want from us, right? From their own filmmakers, they may want romance or comedy, right?
Right.
But from the United States, what they want is what they can't yet do, right?
Right.
We alone have the technology to do.
But what is specifically a couple of things that they don't want to see in a movie that we make over here that would be shown over there?
Well, anything with any political implications, right? Drama that in any way reflects on, you know, political issues that are touchy. I mean, we are doing editing for their political censors to make China look good, to make their country look good, to make their anything that might be in any way rocky not be seen by the Chinese people. So thank God there are still North Korean bad guys, because you'll never see a Chinese bad guy or a Russian bad guy anymore.
Really? So now, as you said in your book, a lot of people have left the movie business and gone into TV, the writers and the stars, And you've been involved in a show that I love, Hot in Cleveland, on the cable channel, TV Land. And I love it because it features older, glamorous women, and it's got Betty White in it. What's been most enjoyable and freeing about working on this show?
Well, when I first pitched the show to CBS, they looked at me like I was out of my mind. They were like, older women? And I was trying to do a new Golden Girls, which had been a hit, obviously, on CBS for years and years. But suddenly, older women were out. And to me, older women were in. They had never been more glorious, never been younger. Older had never been younger, right?
Great.
All the women that I knew were still hot and great-looking and trying to figure out why the men in L.A. and New York and weren't recognizing them for as fabulous as they were. And I know that I went to Texas to try to find some guys that weren't like the guys in New York and L.A., or at least try to have a life that wasn't competing with 25-year-old supermodels, you know, and Kardashian types. So I made up this idea about a bunch of girlfriends whose plane went down and finally found themselves in a town where they were looked at the way they were, you know. It was a fantasy of mine, but when CBS said no, suddenly there was a, and I had a wonderful showrunner, Suzanne Martin, who is responsible for the show completely. This other network said yes, and we all said, what's TV Land, right? But TV Land turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to older women, right?
It
sure
because
is. It didn't matter, and this is part of the new abnormal, too. It didn't matter if you were on one of the four main networks anymore. Because of cable, people would look anywhere to find the show they wanted to find. And there are so many new venues growing every day for so many different niches that this is part of what's exciting about television now. Television is Netflix. Television is Amazon. Television is Hulu. Television is TV Land. There are so many different places to get the kind of programming you want that there is not one gatekeeper that can say we're not interested in older women.
That's Linda Obst in conversation with the host of our program, Carol Marks. And the book that they're discussing is Sleepless in Hollywood, Tales from the New Abnormal in the Movie Business. And the conversation's not complete. There's more coming in just a moment. When A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison in the anchor chair and Carol Marks back in the host position for part two of her conversation with Linda Obst, the former editor of the New York Times Magazine and the woman who produced more than 16 feature films, including some of the big ones of our culture, like The Fisher King, Contact, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Sleepless in Seattle. And they've been talking about her new book titled Sleepless in Hollywood, Tales from the New Abnormal in the Movie Business.
Now, getting back, Linda, to the malaise that the movie industry is suffering domestically and what to do about it. Might having Americans voice their opinions on the current sequel movies through their wallet and feet be effective?
Yes. I mean, I think it's very clear that there were a lot of sequels or a lot of original big tentpoles that were rejected in August. And the studios will notice that. And perhaps, I mean, I'm Pollyanna about this, but I'm hoping that one or two each of the studio's tentpoles that were marginal will not get made next year, and perhaps some original movies will be made in their places. It's clear that the heat worked in the middle of all those failed tentpoles. And those were two women in a movie that men liked as well. Bridesmaids worked, right? Enormously last season when nobody expected it to work. Women came out in droves on the first weekend. So we have to vote with our feet. We have to vote with our attendance. I get discouraged every time a woman's movie does incredibly well, like Something's Gotta Give, and then there's no follow-up. Now, Nancy Myers can make any movie she wants. That's terrific, and so could Nora. But unfortunately, there are not enough Nancy Myers and Nora Ephrons, you know, and we sadly lost Nora this year. So what we need to do is we need to defy the conventional wisdom of the marketers. The marketers say two things. They've always said that the older women audience was the hardest to convert from interest to ticket buyer. In other words, that we would always be the last to get to the theater. We would defer our interest to our children, to our husbands, and then eventually we would get to the theaters for our own movies. And as a result, we were the most recalcitrant audience. We have to be as ardent about our movies as young teenage girls and boys are. They go out for Sex and the City. They go out for Twilight, the young girls. And the fanboys go out for Pacific Rim, you know? We have to do that when we see a movie that has our name on it. We've got to get there in droves, whether it's a tadpole or a tentpole. It'll never be a tentpole. We've got to go. And we have to show that there is an ardent women's market. I think they're hearing it. I see a few more movies in development for women. Whether they get green lit or not, we don't know. But they're looking for signs. We're a very reactive industry. So we must vote with our feet.
And you make another excellent point in your book about the high cost of today's movies because of the cost of marketing. And and you say, you know, that really we could drastically reduce this and use the inexpensive social media and perhaps hopefully free up some money for some good independent films.
Yes. Well, independent films are reliant on social media for marketing. They can't sustain these big television campaigns that the studios rely on for the summer slots. But when you look at a movie like The Way, Way Back, which is now building and building in word of mouth, you can see that a tadpole can break through even in the summer by word of mouth and social media. And if a movie is made for not a lot of money, it ultimately can make more money than a tadpole that breaks even, than a tentpole that breaks even. So it's possible, even in these really difficult distribution slots, for a movie that is popularly accepted to sneak through in counter-programming and find its audience and make a statement.
And that's just what we hope will continue to happen and grow. And finally, when it comes to the movie business, thankfully it's still producing films that some American audiences really want to see. So can you tell your listeners about some of the exciting films you're working on now?
Well, tomorrow we start production on Christopher Nolan's next movie. I was working on it for many, many years at Paramount, developing the script, and I'm thrilled to have that he's the director of it, but ultimately we're in a cone of silence about it. So, because when he makes a movie, it's top secret until it comes out, and that's the way it should be. If you read the chapter in the book on Inception, you see how carefully his movies are marketed, and no information gets out about them until they're released. I'm also working on, hopefully, a follow-up to How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and trying to put that movie together as kind of a tadpole, and that will be fun because making a romantic comedy right now is a great act of Sisyphean effort.
That's Linda Obst in conversation with Carol Marks. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. Her book is titled Sleepless in Hollywood, Tales from the New Abnormal in the Movie Business. Coming up next, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. When A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this point in the program, as we are each week, to take a peek behind the media curtain. We're joined by the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication in talk radio, which this, of course, falls under that category as a talk radio program. His name is Kevin Casey, and he's also a senior correspondent here on A Touch of Gray. And, Kevin, this is an exciting time of year for talk radio, for sports talk radio, and for sports fans. And I know so many of the people who listen to this broadcast are sports fans. And with the pennant races and the wild card races in baseball coming to a climax, at the same time going into the third weekend of the football season when things are starting to become clearer as to who the strong teams are and the weak teams, you get this confluence of new football and the climax of baseball. It is a great time for sports talk, isn't it?
It is a very good time for sports talk, and a very lucrative time as well, too. As you said, you have football, not only pro football, but every Saturday you have all the college football games. And then, you know, as you get down to, as you said, the baseball playoffs, it's a great time of year because all of the games in that radio-friendly sport are that much more important, and people tend to really hang on them.
Now, I'm often asked whether or not sports is talked about on news talk radio. We at Talkers Magazine, and people know I'm involved with Talkers as well. We have surveys of the top topics on News Talk Radio, and usually talk about baseball and talk about football, and even a little hockey and basketball when those seasons are in exciting points in their cycle, gets talked about in News Talk Radio. So it is, you know, let's corroborate this. They talk about sports on News Talk Radio as well, don't they?
They do, but more and more programmers are a little more hesitant to let their talent talk about sports any longer than they think they should. And I know the answer is, well, how long is that? But they're afraid of sounding like a sports talk station and alienating any women who are listening and people who are not interested in sports. That said, there are actually a couple stations across the country that have an interesting, highly sports-oriented program that's every day within the realm of their news talk programming. So it depends a lot upon the market. Some markets accept that a little more than others, I guess, is an easy way to answer that.
And I would imagine that oftentimes they try to opt for the human interest aspects of sports as opposed to the X's and the O's. Kevin Casey, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Casey is the Vice President and Executive Editor of Talkers Magazine. If you want to know more about what's going on behind the scenes in talk radio, go to talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
In Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and it's time now for us to be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is going to be talking now with Rosalyn Byrne, Ph.D. She's Associate Professor of Science, Technology, and Society at the University of Virginia School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. She's going to talk to Stephen about her new book titled When the Horses Whisper, The Wisdom of Wise and Sentient Beings. It's published by Rainbow Ridge Books.
Did you grow up around horses?
I didn't. I actually spent most of my early years in inner city Philadelphia. I did, however, go to summer camp where I was able to learn trail riding.
So now, do you ride now?
Here and there. You know, if I go on vacation, I might take a trail ride.
Yeah. When did you kind of pick up that you were in tune with animals, we'll say, just in general?
Yeah. Well, on reflection, probably that summer camp experience back in the 60s when I was about 11 is probably when it happened. But then, you know, adult maturation and busy life in the regular world, I think it just went away. It was 3 years ago when it came in a very pronounced way. I was riding a horse in Costa Rica, fell off into the river we were crossing, and when I stood up, I actually heard the horse. And that's when it became very, very clear.
Now they always tell you when crossing the rivers, don't look down. You'll get disoriented.
I think I looked down.
Yeah. Now, what was the communication like? It had to be startling.
I was not sure what had happened. First of all, I was soaked head to toe, and I was laughing hysterically because I think what happened is I had some kind of release, just a major release, and in that process was able to hear. The horse was mortified. He was very upset. He felt responsible for my fall.
Aww.
Nothing like that had ever happened to him before. And so when I got back on him to ride back, it was apologetic. And then when he realized I was really understanding him, he shifted and he said, I would like for you to please give a message to my owner. And he specified that he does not need any more training. So when I got off, dismounted, and shared that with her, she was taken aback because she said, how can you know about that? How can you know about our plans? And so I don't think I questioned whether I had been hurt or done something damaging to my brain. I think it was more sort of startling and humbling and exciting.
Now, since that time, have you had, has this enhanced? Have you honed the skill?
So this is exactly what I was concerned about. I, at the time when I fell off of Teton and he began to talk to me, I was at a retreat in Costa Rica where they specialize in horseback riding and therapeutic work. So I actually, while there, talked to all of the horses. But when I came back to Virginia, I wondered, is it just those horses? Is it because I was there in a certain state of mind? And I had an opportunity to meet some horses that are cared for here. Many of them are retired horses, but some of them are not. It's a boarding facility. And as it turned out, I could still hear them. And so since then, I've been visiting that farm and another in Virginia where I live, probably every couple months, just to connect in and follow up on the original conversations. The owners all show up, and we talk about what's going on with the horses and their relationship with the horses. So the answer is yes. It's something I'm able to now cultivate, and I'm getting more confident in what I'm hearing.
You're a scientist, and certainly this has to seem unusual. You said startling, and it is. Have you ever questioned what the aegis, the basis of this is, how this happens?
Well, of course. Well, first let me clarify that I write about science. I study scientists, but my training is actually in bioethics. And so my key questions are always about sort of what's right and good.
Mm-hmm.
In what we're doing with science and technology. But because I live in that world, in an engineering school, of course, I had to ask myself, how do we understand this? And the best thing I can say is that, you know, we really probably don't understand consciousness at a level that we can measure with our instruments. And because we have no way of measuring them with our instruments, we stand back from them. And so it's sort of, at first I thought, is this going to be a conflict with my professional life? But I have to just move forward. I have to not be afraid. I have to believe and hope that maybe one day we'll have a way of measuring and detecting and predicting these kinds of abilities. But until then, I feel that I'm responsible to share what
I'm
learning.
You've got a gift. Now, the relationship between people and horses, and I'm a horse person, and my wife and I are horse owners, is a very, very close one, and has been really throughout time, the bonding between people and horses. Horses are used, as you mentioned, even therapeutic riding programs for people who may not be able to verbally communicate with horses or hear them, but there's a real connection. Are horses unique in this way, as perhaps as far as the advancement of the connection to people?
Well, I can say what the horses have told me about this, and then I can share my own observation. Clearly, people have very deep connections with their dogs, for example. The dogs are so loyal and devoted. I think cats are in a different category. There's
yeah,
a
cats are just taking care of themselves.
A different kind of relationship, because that's a different kind of species. What the horses are telling me, and actually two horses in particular who are very thoughtful and philosophical in some ways, what they've told me is that not wild horses, but horses that have come into direct communication with humans because they've been domesticated, actually on a soul level have agreed to this because they are seeing themselves as helping us, as being here in support of our growth. And that's why they've been willing to fight our wars and do our labor and be our entertainment and be our companions and sacrifice themselves to some extent, because at least for those who've told me this, they see themselves as evolving with us into another level of awareness and consciousness. And part of that is going to come through the pain that we've shared with horses, but now new openings in our understandings of our relationships with one another.
What's the greatest thing you've learned from your communication with horses?
That they're much more perceptive and aware than we ever realize.
Mm-hmm.
That they get what's going on, but that they also have their own feelings and needs and emotions and awarenesses. And ultimately, that they are incredible in their capacity to sense and feel who we are and what we need.
Interesting. And do you learn lessons that you carry over into your life from almost your horse guru?
Almost every time I encounter one, I'm awakened and into a new understanding of myself. I'll tell you a quick story. Last week I was talking with an albino horse who's pretty aged. When I first met him, he was angry because a fellow horse had died in the field, and he was angry because he said, why didn't they call the vet? Why didn't they try to help him? So I had to explain to the owner why he was so disturbed, and she had to then explain to him, at some point we don't call the vet, it was his time, he was old. So this horse, White Knight, is also aging, and he's out there to die. Last time I went to see him, he spoke to me and said, before we talk to the owner, I want you to understand you're also going through a transition towards an aging time in your life, and this is... you're afraid of this, and I can sense it. He had me weeping, and
wow.
I wasn't even conscious of it. But he spoke to me about being aware of my body slowing down and not being able to do things I used to do, and that horses know that happens to them the way humans do, and he wanted to support me in that process. It was incredible.
Is this I don't know whether to call it a talent or an ability. Is this something, do you think, that other people can make themselves become aware of what their capacity might be, or is this, do you think, just not teachable?
I want to hope it's teachable, because I'm going to do a workshop in Costa Rica. It'll be the first time, but I truly believe that we all have an innate capacity to listen at this level and in this way, and we have to just get ourselves into the right frame of mind and able to hear this way. Now, that said, I think we all have different capacities and gifts given our genetic makeup and our background and our orientation and values, and it might come more easily to some than others. Like, math isn't so easy for me. I can do it, but it's not a gift. And I think it's similar with this. I think that we can be taught to open more than we currently are, because the horses I've met really want to connect in this way with their owners and their companions.
That's Rosalind Byrne, PhD, and the book is titled When the Horses Whisper, The Wisdom of Wise and Sentient Beings, published by Rainbow Ridge Books. The interviewer, of course, is our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. And Steve Wiseman's going to put his attorney hat on, and he's going to talk about gay rights. That's next when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of our program and a return of Steve Wiseman. Steve is an attorney and an author, and he's written a number of books. He's an expert on scams. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. And he has a website that is fabulous. It's called scamaside.com. Check it out. Steve's here now to talk about gay rights. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, a lot of people were looking with great anticipation to the recent decision of the United States Supreme Court, which struck down portions of the Defense of Marriage Act and recognized some real necessary and
absolutely correct rights for same-sex couples. The question was, though, how is the federal government going to deal with this when it came to things like Medicare and Social Security and other benefits? Because generally speaking, what the federal government would do is recognize marriage according to what was done in that particular state. So it left the possibility of having same-sex couples who were married, but then moved or lived in a state that didn't recognize same-sex marriage as losing some of those federal benefits. But just recently, the Treasury Department said that the IRS is going to use, and I like the term they used, a place of celebration rule in recognizing same-sex marriages. So what that means is, if you are married in a state that recognizes same-sex marriage, and even if you move to another state that does not recognize same-sex marriage, your marriage will still be recognized, and indeed, you will be able to use all of the federal income tax rules that a married couple would. And interestingly enough, the rule is retroactively, and so the statement by the IRS said, generally, the statute of limitations for filing a refund claim is 3 years from the date the return was filed or 2 years from the date the tax was paid, whichever is later. So as a result, refund claims can still be filed for tax years 2010, 2011, and 2012. And there's a big step to the general federal recognition of same-sex marriages. Department of Health and Human Services also ruled this past week that legally married same-sex couples wherever they live, and that can be in a state that doesn't recognize same-sex marriage, they will be eligible for certain Medicare benefits that in the past had been reserved for married couples. So this is a trend. However, it's not across the board. And Social Security is still using what they call the place of residence rule. And so for Social Security benefits, if a same-sex married couple moves to or lives in a state that does not recognize same-sex marriage, they will not be eligible for Social Security benefits. So it's a good trend that's happening in the recognizing of rights, but it certainly isn't complete as of this time. What I would suggest is any same-sex married couples should contact their lawyer or accountant to see what rights they will be able to have and which ones still may be denied.
Thank you, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. Thank you, Beverly Santinello on the front line, the producer of our program. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Thank you, Kevin Casey. And thank you to you, our listeners. And I'm Michael Harrison on behalf of the entire Touch of Grey team. We invite you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.